Welcome to Be Honest Podcast with Dr. Yana and Dr. Sherry, where we hold honest conversations about life, relationships, challenges, and everything in between, with unfiltered discussions with real people, offering their authentic stories, experiences, and perspectives. No topic is off limits and no story is too small. Join us on United Public Radio Network 107.7 FM.
Welcome back, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to United Public Radio 107.7 in the lovely, sunny New Orleans, Louisiana. Today, you're live with Dr. Yana and Dr. Sherry. If you're enjoying our show, go ahead and head over to YouTube and subscribe to our channel, Be Honest Talks. And as a reminder to our listeners, while we hold PhDs, we're still more likely to diagnose you with a case of giggles than anything else. So sit back, relax, and let our highly educated guests entertain you. And now to my lovely co-host, Dr. Yana.
Thank you, fantastic Dr. Sherry. Thank you. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Today, we have a very interesting topic, and the topic is in dark psychology. And you may say, you know what? We have already discussed so much of the dark psychology. Perhaps it is enough for us. You have loaded us with all of that. But to tell you the truth, we're going to have one last nail. This is going to be good because something that we needed to relate to you in regards of the dark psychology. So stay with us and learn a lot about the darkness part of psychology, because not everything in psychology is so nice and peachy and helpful, right? There's also psychological tricks can be also applied to different areas of our lives. So we think of dark psychology as serial killers, perhaps, right? Where it would mostly be used in our minds, right? But this is not exactly what it is. Dark psychology is also not a witch hunt. We're not going to target witches here. It is, in fact, the everyday pervasive way of our minds being manipulated. So in dark psychology, we don't need to have any supernatural powers or rituals. They are based on our science of psychology and revolve in the circle of logic. So not all people can easily spot dark psychology tactics, because fewer and fewer people nowadays, they make decisions based on logic. So, and in fact, we spoke about that before, people who make decisions based on logic and critical thinking are not easily tricked. So we advocate for reason, intellectual approach to everything, and avoiding emotions in making your decisions. So what is dark psychology after all, Dr. Sherry? I think so. Dark psychology is like, it sounds so dark and black and dark gray, something like that, right? But
yeah, because it usually has a harmfulness to the human spirit, unless we could say, for lack of a better way to put it there. It's often used to harm someone emotionally, physically, or psychologically. So that's why it's so dark.
Yes, dark psychology delves into the hidden parts of human behavior, exploring manipulative tactics that we employ to control, influence, and exploit others for our own gain. And we can't really set ourselves apart to say, oh no, I never use it. We do use it. And as parents, we use it, as our parents also used it. And manipulation is as old as the world. So, dark psychology is rooted in Machiavellian principles, and we're going to discuss them a little later. It examines the dark aspects of human nature, shedding light on the intricate web of deception, coercion and psychological manipulation. Ooh, those are such sweet words. Psychological manipulation. Okay, so, let's explore concepts, methods, and implications of this topic of dark psychology. Let's talk about its prevalence and ethical consideration that it raises. So how do we understand dark psychology, Dr. Sherry? What is it there for us to even know? And do we need to know anything about it? Or do we need to leave it only to the to the academia to explore and understand?
I think it's good to know all about it, especially for your own self to not be contributing to such dark psychology in your own life, perhaps not using these tactics to control other dominants. I mean, I think we're seeing it every day with propaganda in the news, things we see, you know, the exploitation, sex trafficking, all these different topics out there have a big influence of what we call dark psychology. So understanding it, I think lay people should, just like scholars, should also have an understanding of what it means.
Oh, yes. Yes, that is why we're talking about it. And we have spoken about it for the past couple of months, Dr. Sherry? Mm-hmm. And you're like, I'm so tired of talking about it. And Dr. Yana is like, no, there's one more topic that we need to cover.
Right? If we talk about narcissism one more time.
You're like, if we talk about narcissism, psychopathy one more time, I'm not going to make it. So...
But that is can shed light on a dark topic. So that's the beauty of it.
Yeah, we have already discussed that. And it was understood that it was a part of dark psychology, of course. And the dark psychology in itself that encompasses a spectrum of techniques and strategies that are aimed at manipulating the thoughts, emotions, and behaviors of other people. Otherwise, it wouldn't exist. So at its core, Machiavellian principles to exploit the vulnerabilities of human psychology, such as cognitive biases, emotional triggers, and social dynamics to exert control of their targets. So what are the methods that we know that are used? Just the ones that we can think of. We don't have to dive deep into the psychology in order to know that. But something that lies on the surface.
Persuasion. When you've already said it a couple of times, manipulation.
Yeah,
you know, persuasion. What's involved in these deception.
And some people are easier to manipulate, and some people are much better at manipulating others than other people. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, that's why some people may be considered to be gullible, perhaps not in touch with their own vulnerabilities. But you'll hear, or I've heard people say, like, God, they're so gullible. They'll buy anything. You can sell them anything. And that's a persuasion tactic that's not always out to harm somebody. That's just but in the simple way, even selling something that you're trying to gain something for is still a bit of control and power there. There's still a means of trying to control something to get what you want at the cost of someone else, whether it be emotional, right, financial, physical.
Absolutely. With persuasion techniques, there's framing, anchoring, and social proof. And those are a lot used in sales. And a lot of the times we think that, it is so innocent. In fact, that we have to understand that when we go out and we're being sold something, we should always look for the motive. So first we need to ask ourselves, do I really need it? For Pete's sake, do I really need it? You know how many times lately I started going to the store, and of course, like emotionally, I want to make all those decisions because it feels so good to me. Oh, I like it. Oh, this dress is so fantastic. And I try it on, and it can be so uncomfortable, but it looks so good. And I put it into my cart, and I'm like, okay, I need to buy it. And I taught myself, you know what? Those were emotional moments. And I looked at the things that I wanted to purchase, and like, no, I don't need it. And when am I going to wear that? It is so uncomfortable. And lately I decided to wear only comfortable clothes, only comfortable shoes. And yes, they look so fantastic. And we see all that fashion all the time from the screens, from all possible screens that we have in our lives, to the right and to the left, up and down. Yeah, we are told how to live our lives, what to follow, what influencers, it's such an interesting word, influencers, they can be nothing of themselves, right? And they started to gain popularity, and all of a sudden they're influencers, and they get to make decisions for the majority of people, because people look at these famous people and then they make their decisions because they like this person, for example, right? There was one person who made a comment on Facebook when I was talking about darkness and light, about hell and heaven. And one person made a comment, oh, why do I need to listen to you in order to make my determination on what is hell and heaven is? And he called me philosophically challenged.
Well, and that's theologically, that's not even philosophy, right? That's theological.
That was so interesting. And in fact, I was laughing because he suggested that I need to research the topic of archetypal psychology because I was so naive and gullible. And I said to him in the nicest way, you know what? This is my topic. This is what my life study is all about in the archetypal psychology. And this is how I can make my informed decisions here. Mm-hmm. But that was really, he was very emotional and said that I was philosophically challenged. So we will leave it at that. And we should always make informed decisions. We should always understand, not just say something, but also support our opinions with facts, right?
Well, I think anyone who's calling you out for being philosophically challenged is indeed philosophically challenged themselves, because someone who is of a high philosophical intelligence would not be engaging in such reprehensible behavior.
Yeah. And the only insult that I could think of him would be to return it back to the unchallenged one. I was challenged. He was the unchallenged one. You know, sometimes this kind of conversations, they create a niche in the person's mind to continue thinking and possibly questioning themselves, because attacking others for their opinions shows something about ourselves, right?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, speaking of archetypes, there you go. The shadow, right? Reflecting what you are, which is indeed probably what this person is struggling with on the inside.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And here we talk about everything. If we speak of the dark psychology, what happens? We don't have to dive deep and speak in the scientific language in order to help people understand this topic. What happens when we encounter a person who is so negative to us for no reason at all in our eyes, right? We have not been negative, for example, right? We have not offended that human being, and nevertheless, that person just lashes out all the anger that they have. That happened to me so many times, and I stopped being upset with people, and I understand a long time ago, I understand that that is a projection. That is a form of their own undealt shadow, that with parts of their personalities and experiences repressed, and then at some point, they do come out. So as a shadow being reflected up on you, we must understand that it is not always us.
Oh, no. And I think there's a lot of material out there to teach you and how to not to take things personally. Because when you can start to stop taking things so personally, you can learn how to deal with a situation without reacting so highly. Unless the situation, there could be something that triggers you emotionally or something happens that causes you to feel the need to say something or to react. I think when you're going back to what you were saying with these influencers, I had a friend recently, she was talking about it, and she was saying how so many people are caught up into other people's lives And it's not even true. She said there's like this, she was explaining to me, like, there's this couple and they're like on, I want to say on TikTok, maybe I don't remember mm-hmm, the platform. Mm-hmm. And she said that they're pretending to be in a relationship and they're not. And they even said, we're not in a relationship. It's all fiction, but people keep showing up, watching them, buying into this relationship. That's not even real. Believing it's still real. That's like mind blowing to me.
Oh yeah, you know, it's always blew my mind, Dr. Sherry, that people do not need the truth. People need lies. Feed them lies and they will follow you for the rest of your life. So that is goes the herd mentality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that good point.
There's no critical thinking if you look at that. Mm-hmm. There is huge manipulation on that part, and you have a choice whether to believe that couple or not. And of course, what do you do with yourself? What do you do with yourself? How do you not believe that? How do you not feel bad when you look at those people and think and see such an amazing relationship, right, that you crave it for yourself? Mm-hmm. In fact, in books, in the literature, we always read stories like that, right? There are negative mm-hmm. and there are positives. Leo Tolstoy said at the beginning of his novel, Anna Karenina, he said, all happy families are alike. And every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. So if we look at that, if we read literature, we see something that we want in our lives, right? We crave something and that we know that it is not real. You know, possibly it's based on true events, because where else would the authors, the writers take the inspiration,
but
right?
It's still not your reality, right?
It is still not your reality, but you wish that you had this incredible relationship. You wish that you had the lifestyle of those people. You have no damn idea what happens behind the curtains, right? And you wish that you had that. But nevertheless, that is this idealistic image that people create, and then you follow them. You know, mm-hmm. it's speaking about then advertising, there is a lot of dark psychology also involved. And even people involved in that, that are not necessarily affecting other human beings. They are a part of this huge circle. It's like the windmill wheel, right? Windmill that keeps turning and turning, and we all get trapped inside of it. For example, if we look at the Hollywood, not necessarily the actors, because there are a lot of authentic actors and actresses there. But if you look at the general line there is a lot of emphasis on having artificial breasts, for example, right? Artificial butts.
Body modifications?
Listen, I will never understand the artificial butt. I will never understand. Maybe because I have a good sized butt, you know, that I don't need to offer it, you know. But people always crave what they don't have, right? And I could never understand. I will never understand that. Like, we call it like a suitcase hanging behind you. But nevertheless, by looking at those influencers, what are they called these days, right? We look at them and said, oh, this is so fantastic. If we look at the Kardashian family, none of them except the mother probably look what they used to look before. None of them. It's like they are running away. They are in a witness protection that they have to change their way that they look completely, completely, completely. And that is so sad. Nevertheless, we look at that and subconsciously we take on the ideas that we need to be following that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So incredible. How are things? Okay, so I live in the proximity to Hollywood here in San Diego. How are things there, Dr. Sherry, in Louisiana?
Dark. Just kidding. I think it's a little bit of everything everywhere you go. There's always going to be people who are living outside of themselves trying to be whole. I don't think it's as prevalent with the body modifications. It's not something that I see around all the time. Maybe a lot of sirens. Just kidding. One's passing by.
What's going on there? Somebody's fake butt fell off.
Could be. But you know, or you never know.
Oh, boob exploded.
I don't think it's as trendy here. It's just not that that type of city. It's not that rich of a city in regards to people seeking that false, that illusion. The illusion, if I have this, this, and that. But I'm sure everywhere we go, there's going to be people like that, you know? I just don't think it's as trendy here.
That's good. You know, maybe I should move there.
Less BBLs, you know, I think they call them BBLs, right?
What's that?
I think that's the term for the butt.
Boobs, called BBL. Boobs, butt, and
I have to look it up. I just know the acronym.
Lashes, eyelashes, I don't know. Artificial lashes. So I have no idea. But yeah, that is just the... a little bit too much sometimes. Let's not go too far into that, but this is how the media is affecting our decisions. And I can see here, for example, women who are not rich, and I see that they have a modest income, and nevertheless, they are so unhappy with their body image that they go and inflate their butts. I don't even know how they sit on that. I have to ask someone. I have to... I really need to ask because I'm so curious about it. Well,
I think it's just injecting. I believe it just has to do with injecting fat from different parts of the body into the buttocks.
So, yeah. And it's also like if you go to the plastic surgeons, there are a lot of them that are missing ethical standing, of course, and that exploit vulnerabilities.
So patients die.
Patients die. Well, people can die regardless, right? There are complications of surgeries. But nevertheless, they would never say, listen, you don't need it because you're beautiful as you are. Oh, I know what you're talking about. L is lips. BBL, butt, boobs, lips. See, it just came up to me. That's right. It dawned on me.
Our big butt and lashes.
Lashes, exactly. Everything in that area. So, this is what it is. There is a lot of
persuasion to be something other than you are.
And that is dark. It is also dark. Thinking that those doctors, they went to medical school, correct? And they did learn ethics. And nevertheless, you and I had to learn ethics. I thought it was such a stupid class. But nevertheless, we had to learn that, right? But people don't make ethical considerations. So they do, they will inflate people's faces, butts and boobs, augment them, right? Look at the Versace. Was that the Versace?
Donatella
Versace. Yeah, she started augmenting her face, and then it just went out of the roof, and she continues to do that. And of course, living in the world of excess money, people are able to do that. But nevertheless, what are the your moral, what is your moral standing? What is your authenticity? What is there that you're truly interested in? Butts and boobs and external modifications, for example, is not something that stands for authenticity. And I understand that some women, they may have like really small ones and they just want to fix it or to feel better about themselves, but not to impress the world. Because I'm not at all just banishing this whole area of plastic surgery. But nevertheless, we're talking about the dark persuasion and psychology. Well, dark psychology, like you mentioned, manifests in various domains of our lives, including personal relationships, politics, marketing, and warfare, my favorite. In personal relationships, we can use manipulation tactics like we discussed a lot in psychopathy and narcissism to exert control over their partners, exploit their vulnerabilities, undermine their autonomy. And in politics, politicians and leaders may employ propaganda, misinformation, and fear tactics to manipulate public opinion and maintain power. So I've been thinking about the Machiavellianism. And Machiavelli, he's such an interesting historical figure. I like him immensely because he wrote on something that we still, he was born in the 15th century, right? And published in the 16th century. And nevertheless, we're still talking about him and in a very negative term, right? So it is a political philosophy, as we understand it, which is derived from his writings, and especially the treatise that he wrote called The Prince. Right, he was a Florentine diplomat, author, and philosopher, and historian who lived in the very difficult times of the Renaissance. So his writing is often associated with cunning, deceit, and manipulation, and politics, and leadership. So it suggests that the ends justify the means, advocating for the use of whatever methods are necessary to achieve and maintain power. So Machiavellian leaders, as we talk about now, they're typically portrayed as calculating and willing to prioritize their own interests above all else, right? And they disregard moral and ethical considerations. The interesting thing about it, that we have a lot of politicians that are, and a lot of studies, by the way, that not only suggest that there is a link between politicians and running for the office and Machiavellianism, psychopathy, and narcissism. A lot of studies that connect that.
Mm-hmm. I think the most simplified way to look at it, dark psychology, is we're all going to, I think throughout our life cycle, we're all going to contribute to these types of tactics. We're going to manipulate people. We may use deception at some point in our lives. We may even deceive ourselves, right? We're going to use persuasion, maybe exploit something at some point in our lives. However, when we use these tactics in regard to out of malice and not just to like to get what I want, when we do it to harm someone or to try to gain power and dominance, I think that's what makes it so dark. Because I think we're going to do things to persuade our kids, or we're going to use tactics of these sorts. But when we do it to harm someone, that's what makes it so dark.
To harm, absolutely. And a lot of the times people don't know that they have been harmed, Dr. Sherry. How do we go about that? For example, if we look at the sales, the psychology of sales, oh my God, they influence the customer's thoughts, emotions, and behaviors. And that leads to their increased sales and profits. So while some salespeople, right, they use ethical and transparent methods to persuade customers, a lot of the times they resort to exploiting psychological vulnerabilities. And we can even see that through the media, which are on the TV, which are on the radio. And there you are, all sorts of things that we need to buy, including myself. And I listen to that and I hear that and I see that. And oh my God, all of a sudden I need it because somebody else told me that I need it.
Yeah, or I mean, some people have this desire to continuously shop and buy all the time, but it never really brings them fulfillment, but they can't stop doing it. But it never truly fulfills that void inside, right?
Do you ever? But that is, like, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And that it is, that goes hand in hand with the plastic surgery, because mm-hmm. once people start, they cannot stop.
And it's like a way of consuming, right? It's a consumption of, instead of a consumption of knowledge, it's a consumption of not power per se, but it's some type of consumption.
Oh, yes. I think, what was his name? The in the past century, the incredible guy, he was a plastic surgeon, Maxwell something, who wrote the cybernetics. Last name. Yeah, so he wrote on the subject of cybernetics. Interestingly enough, he used to be a plastic surgeon. And he said that doesn't matter how many surgeries the person would have, they cannot fill that void inside of them. So it's the same with shopping. But I believe...
Or drugs, or people.
Or drugs.
Whatever you're consuming.
Exactly. And this is why when our critical factor is turned off, we need to turn it on in order to understand the consequences of the behavior that you are engaged in, right? It's either buying, like, for example, buying is a good, I was just joking with my daughter. We went shopping and we bought a few cute things for ourselves and we felt better. And I said, well, Gabriela, this is such a great therapy for women. She said, yeah, mom, this is so good. But if we look at therapy per se, like for ladies, for example, yeah, it feels good to go and get something for yourself, right? Especially even if you don't need it, to buy something to in order to feel good about yourself, right?
It's good to reward yourself.
You're rewarding yourself in some sense.
Because you're worth, you're worthy of it.
We are worthy. You're absolutely right. But at the same time, like you said, they're pathological buying. And people are not able to steer away from that. Why? You know, in my life, I spent a lot of money on different media that I would avoid listening to commercials. I cancel the commercials. And of course, you have to pay the premium for that. And there's no commercials in my house. I don't have TV, meaning that the streaming TV, right?
Ad-free.
I'm ad-free completely. Because as a hypnotherapist, I know anything that is said, even when you are not watching closely. For example, you're watching a movie and all of a sudden, there is a commercial break, right? What do you
seconds,
do?
60 seconds,
and then you get up. Okay, I'm gonna go make myself some tea, something to eat. Nevertheless, you don't mute it, right? Because you want to know when to come back and watch it. What happens? You hear this commercial, you don't pay attention to it. It is recorded in your subconscious mind. Next time you go to the store and you walk in the aisle, right? You see 20 products of the same type, but what you're going to do, you're going to buy the one that you heard was good. And that stayed in your subconscious mind. And that's how you make a decision. So not listening to commercials is very important, unless you really need to get some information on those products. People keep telling me, oh no, I don't listen to them. I don't, I'm so in myself. I'm a very critical person. I know how to control myself. I'm not persuaded by those commercials at all. Huge nonsense. We know so little about our subconscious. And you and I, being hypnotherapists, we know how crucial it is. And that is why my children grew up without commercials. They know when to go and get things if they really needed to. But, you know, I can't really say that with 100% of certainty, because they watch social media and they are influenced by those influencers, right? Because they're teenagers, they're young adults. They want to fit in. They want to know what's in the trend. So it's a tricky situation.
Yeah, there's so much information out available at our fingertips now, or just at our eyeballs. And there's also, in addition to that abundance of information, there's a lot of misinformation. That's the unfortunate part about these platforms and social medias. Is there's a lot, because there's a lot of great things, learning tools. You can learn a lot from these things, but there's also misinformation. Are dangerous things for children. They're being persuaded to try these challenges, and some of them end up harmed or, if not, dead.
And that is the dark side of commercials, the dark side of the advertising. So it is, what do they use in advertising? The one of the
messages?
Oh, yeah, subliminal messages. It is so easy. We've spoken about that already. Subliminal messages. There's a manipulative persuasion that we've discussed already. Salespeople. They use persuasive techniques that exploit cognitive biases and emotional triggers, right? For example, they use the scarcity tactics, limited time offers, or only one left. And we immediately say, oh, I'm going to miss out. This is a bias of missing out, right? People don't want to miss out. Everybody else is doing that. I have to do that, since there's so many people are buying that. I must be one as well. So they do the false scarcity, creating artificial scarcity by claiming that these products are in high demand, right? I don't need anything that is in high demand, because if we know how this advertisement works, we would understand that I don't need it. Turn on your brains, people. Turn off your emotions sometimes and turn on your brains.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that the fear of missing out, for example, that the scarcity is created by the, what's it called? Black Friday. There, Black Friday. The entire world goes crazy when they see us in the United States televised at 5 o'clock in the morning, right? How we go and try to get things at the cheaper prices, right? Killing yourself, killing other people, stumbling over them and stomping on them. And that is the bizarre thing. You know, before I thought, oh, this is so incredible that they have all the sales. And I would see adults, that was the first time I moved to the United States. I would see adults, you know, seemingly reasonable to me, not lacking any intellectual prowess. They would just go at 5 o'clock in the morning. They would stand in line to get it, something that they wanted. And I could not understand it.
Some people got, I think, stamped, like stampeded to death.
Stampede,
right?
Like- to death, exactly. And then I noticed that this is such a dark, dark technique employed by the stores, by the advertising world, creating the scarcity. And what I realized that at that time, I can buy the same product even online. I can go a different time of the day if I really wanted to get it at that price. But the scarcity, people still believe that scarcity, they will go. And we are not talking about the social, the lower socioeconomic classes that are flocking to the Black Friday stores, right? This can be just anybody wanting to take advantage of the price. But nevertheless, I just wanted to let you know that you are being heavily manipulated. Just check it out. Go to the stores this day, tomorrow, and even the day before. You will be able to buy the same products. So that is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, and I think we've always been, and we always will be, as long as we're have our feet on this planet, we will experience dark psychology. Now it's just about understanding how to be aware, right? To have vigilance.
Yeah. And when we look at that, we have to understand that people by design, they want to believe in the goodness of other people, you know, unless they're are born Machiavellian, unless they are born with that set of archetypes that is inherently manipulative and wants to take advantage of people. But there are tactics that we need to understand that can influence our subconscious minds without even us knowing. For example, a lot of the times people say, because, right? You go to the store, you spoke about the persuasion, Dr. Sherry, and how do people use it? How do they persuade you? In fact, they use a lot of because, you know, it's like the cause and effect, the explanation for people. And then you think that, oh, okay, so this is a great explanation. Perhaps I need to succumb to this statement, right? I noticed it was so bizarre to me when I went to the physical therapy office one time, and I don't know whether the owner of it is going to be watching that, but I actually mentioned that they need to sign you up, correct? They need to sign you up, and that can be for a year and a half of coming in the chiropractor's office. Most of the time it is not covered by the insurance, so they have to be good salespeople in order to sign you up. So as I was there, of course, knowing a lot about human manipulation, I see the doctor of that office talking to me about the benefits, how I'm going to be an absolutely new person. There are so many people that are coming and benefiting from that, coming in crippled and walking out completely alive and not hurting anymore. And he was using the touch. And I thought, okay, that this person is excessively touching me. There must be a reason that every time he says something, he touches me on the shoulder, like, for example, right, or on the back. They use praise and validation, of course, in order to persuade you. And I told them, I said, you don't need to work that hard on persuading me to do that because I need it myself, right? I need to be fixed and my back was hurting at the time. But he laughed at that because he understood that I recognize all the sales techniques that he was using. So us as human beings, we want to believe in the goodness of other people. So the best salespeople, what are they? They're empathetic, right? They're empathetic. They're good listeners. So
they're persuasive.
Persuasive in that regard, right? You build trust with that person. And by being touched, and I know that there's so many people, especially in our Western world, we don't like to be touched. Nevertheless, Dr. Sherry, I noticed that every time he would make a comment and he would touch me on the shoulder, for example, that every time built rapport with him.
However, while it built rapport for you, someone who is afraid of physical touch, who may have been violated and it triggers their space, that could have actually triggered someone to not use those services. So that could also backfire. I don't think touching someone is always a great tool because that's really a violation of space.
Well, this is what we think. This is what we believe, right? That's when we turn on our critical thinking, right? It could be a violation of my space. And I realized that he probably overdone it. Otherwise, it probably would have gone unnoticed, even by me, because he was so charming and he was handsome and charming and such a sweet talker. And if he wasn't touching
me so excessively... Don't go to the chiropractor lonely, people. And remember, you're listening to Be Honest Talks on United Public Radio, 107.7 in New Orleans.
107.7. And people, we are live. And we are so glad that you are with us, listening to us and trying to understand the dark psychology and manipulative tactics that people use. So you could use it for yourself. So you could empower yourself, educate yourself, and not to fall into the next manipulator that comes your way. Another,
you kind of see it like a cycle. You ever see it as just a cycle of evolution? Like I think of the I want to say the trans community. There are a lot of people who wanted to, who are transitioning, and now you have people who have transitioned who are speaking out about detransitioning. So it psychology in general just reminds me of a cycle of evolution. Like if we think of the experiments of the past, very hardcore through the 1920s, the 1970s, they were doing these like awful, unethical studies. So we created these ethical tools. We have to take these ethics classes so we don't, you know, partake in these types of things. Yes. But do you ever just see this as like a cycle of evolution? Like you say in the plastic surgery, do you think we're going to grow? What's going to come from that? From the dark, what light is going to come from it? You know, like it reminds me of the cycle of evolution. It's like we have these impactful things, and then we continue to morph into all these different. I mean, before you know it, AI will be here, right?
Yes, so this is so interesting. I don't know.
Need to look like robots.
I don't know what positive, like you asked about the positive aspect of that. I'm not sure about the positive aspect. Yes, history repeats itself, right? And there is a cycle, always is a cycle. But how do we stay alive, right? Preserving our integrity and our authenticity moving forward. So, I could say that our world, living in this circle, of course, we always walk around in that path, evolving, of course. And every time, in each generation, each century provides its own interesting twist in history. We had Renaissance, we spoke about Machiavelli. Now, did anything change since that time that he wrote that book? Nothing has changed. People are still manipulative. They will use any tactics in order to gain their interests. And if we look at others that did not like his book at the time when he wrote it, they banish him completely. They criticize him heavily at the time. And even now people criticize that, right? To be Machiavellian is very negative. But if we look at that, nothing ever changed. Nothing ever changed.
Not the dark psychology.
Not the dark psychology. It ingrained in human mind. We will continue to behave this way. For example, nowadays, we have this incredible writer, Robert Greene, who wrote The 48 Laws of Power and The Art of Seduction. I was going to say persuasion because this is exactly what it is, right? And I, at the beginning, when I read his books, I thought, what a malevolent person. Who in the world would publish such books for them to be the blueprint for behavior, right? To use those tactics and affect other human beings. And then I started understanding that he wrote those books, and I listened to his lectures and podcasts, his talks, and he's talking about that he wrote that book not to give people the blueprint on how to manipulate other people, but how for us to be informed how other people manipulate us and not just succumb to those tricks. So the same with Machiavelli, but nevertheless, he was a proponent of so many different things that I would, or the majority of the population would not like. But nevertheless, for example, he said that he was a proponent of subjugating the masses of people, like the regular citizens, in order to control them, right? He was the proponent of the leaders using dark psychology in order to oppress people, you know, because this is the way how they could be controlled, right? And if we look even at the 48 Laws of Power that Robert Greene wrote about, I think it was the ancient, the art of war, right? The art of war. Who was he? Lao Tzu, who wrote it. I might be mistaken now. And he said, in the art of war, you have to completely kill your enemy. Meaning that killing enemy, Dr. Sherry, wake up right there.
Never outshine the master.
You're asleep.
It's a lot of information, but it's a little much. My ADD or the ADHD is like, I'm like, why?
Yeah, but nevertheless,
I'm familiar with Dr. Greene or Robert Greene. Is he a doctor?
Robert Greene. No, he's not a doctor.
So may not miss.
It was Dr. Gray, I believe that he's a doctor, but he's green. The oldest doctor's greens.
I do like him because he speaks of Robert Greene speaks about his struggles, and he struggled a lot. Like, you know, he went through so many jobs, and I like his lectures as well. I think he's a brilliant writer, and he has a lot to offer.
Yes, and it is absolutely important to read his books. And listen to him, even if you are not the reader, if you're not a reader, turn on the audiobooks, because he talks a lot about manipulation. So arm yourself with the knowledge, listen and educate yourself, read books, so you will not be so gullible next time. You know, so the same with Machiavelli. I'm so glad that he published that, because now we have a term, Machiavellian, right? So I think also for, you asked the question, and how do we proceed from there? What good can be gained from that? For example, last century, the 20th century, we had modernism, right? We had this, the movement, the social movement, modernism. Now we live in the postmodernistic times when everything that is happening actually negates what was in modernistic movement. So if we move forward, I was thinking about that a lot, in fact, and in my understanding, we have to be able to preserve our own interests as these times, because these times are so unpredictable.
Yeah. I think that I honestly think the earth just replenishes itself. I think civilization becomes so that we take ourselves out. I think we lead to, you have people modifying their bodies with science, and then we're coming to a to where we're having robots or AI per se that, well, I'm not going to say it's going to take over and we're going to end ourselves. And look at you, they talk about global warming and how we may one day not have a planet. It's just going to regenerate. Just like, it's like a process, cycle of evolution. That's why I often think of these, like the pyramids and all these ancient civilizations that they're unveiling, and, you know, that are coming to light, that they've revealed or unburied. What's another word? Excavated? I don't know the word to put there. But you think about all these things and they're like, how did they do these things? Well, it probably took place, you know, just like this is taking place. They probably had the modern technology to do such. However, we just cannot connect the dots. So there's a high chance that we'll wash ourselves out at some point. And then another, you know, biological cellular structure will appear. And then they will be probably somewhat asking the same questions or wondering about dark psychology in the millennia to come.
We will have another flood and that will be it.
Or they might be watching from Mars at that point, right?
Yeah, we don't know. Yeah. And in the Bible, there is a story, of course, why the flood even took place, because the humanity became so corrupted that it needed to be erased by the gods. We call it a god in a single terms, but in fact, there were gods. And of course, I don't, in fact, believe this story that we were so corrupted that we needed to die. What kind of a malevolent god that we have that we pray to, right?
It sounds that, like authoritative.
Yeah. Right? Yes, that's right.
Dictatorship, you know, and those types of things that have like taken out millions of their own people. That's
millions of their own people. So if we look at that, and we speak, of course, of the Stalin, we speak of Saddam Hitler. Hussein, right? Hitler, we talk about Putin, right? And we're not even understanding that we ourselves are engaging in the same types of practices, right? That is, we always are. We always see the log in the eyes of other people, and we don't see
like casting stones.
Casting stones all the time. Yeah, casting stones. And we think that we want to obey this, the most benevolent God, and our culture is just so permeated by this idea of the benevolent God. God loves me no matter what. So he did not like the Jews, right? He did not like the, such a sensitive topic now.
That's like a herd mentality. You have the people who are so constructed by theology that they don't see anything other than, you know, that scientific, it's not, you know, it's all God's creation. It's not possible that, you know, science is.
But the interesting thing is that, exactly, so if we believe here that we would go, God, it was only in the Old Testament, right? It was only a long time ago when he was punishing people. Now he's a benevolent God, right? He's not a benevolent God. You know, that the history repeats itself.
God, right? Jealous God.
Angry and jealous God. And it is written in the scriptures that I'm a jealous God. I'm a jealous. Dark psychology. If we look at that, we have to look at the religion, right? at its beginning, because dark, jealous, and vindictive, that's the God. But somehow we naively want to be persuaded by, again, the dark psychology of the religious movements that
we are. Well, because no matter what you do, you're forgiven if you believe in that construct. If I do something horrible to somebody and I ask for forgiveness, I'm forgiven. You know, they used to say when we were kids or in high school, sex is a sin. We used to say sex is fun, sex is a sin, sex is forgiven, I'll do it again. Because we were so rebellious about well, me and some other people, not we as a whole generalization of people. But just saying that, which is kind of ignorant in itself, but I mean, we're young. But just rebelling against the institution of marriage, like, fuck you, we can do it and... Oops, beep.
Yeah.
You can do something and be forgiven. And I think unless it's like a cardinal sin, then you may go somewhere else. I don't really know.
There's a lot where of are we going to go, and, Dr. Sherry? Where are we going? Where are we
somewhere
going?
Somewhere between heaven sins? And hell. Like, I believe we just go back to the earth myself, personally. However, you know, there's eternal sunshine for people out in another realm. But as you spoke in, or as you wrote before that, you know, we're actually living in it.
We're living in hell. Yeah, that hell is a construct made by humans, you know. So it's what did I say, Dr. Sherry? You need to quote me. I forget my own statement.
You said, like, hell is to punish the crowds, I want to say. And you said, like, heaven is used as a construct to reward the masses.
Oh, yes, to punish and reward. Those are great tools. And of course, we invented hell and the paradise and the concept of paradise. Of course, it is, if we look at the whole science of it and linguistics, we will understand that there is no paradise. And a lot of people say that, oh, I have seen this paradise. I've seen hell. Why don't you just look at hell on earth? In the paradise that you can create yourself by helping humanity, right? There could be some spiritual places as the manifestations of your own mind, places in your own mind, right? But nevertheless, it's the hell of on earth that we created. And speaking about manipulation, manipulation will always be a part of it.
Always. Dark psychology is wherever there is light, there will always be dark. You cannot have one without the other. It will always exist. It's how do you not allow it to encompass you as an individual, as a whole? How do you not allow other people to affect you so dark? I mean, even what things
we have to educate ourselves. Educate ourselves, not be so gullible, right? Mm-hmm. Take the rose-tinted glasses off. Question things. Question. And not know exactly what you want in this life, so you will not be swept away.
Yeah, right? Become your own individual. If you have too many people, what they call sheep, I guess, the herd mentality, is that what they refer to people as, sheep? Mm-hmm. There's so many people in the herd mentality that they're just so, but it's like the masses believe in that, and it's really difficult to take people out of that.
Isn't that interesting? Just now I was thinking about the sheep, as we are called the sheep in Christianity, right? We're called the sheep, and God cares about us so profoundly, loves us, and is going to leave all of us that are there in the herd. And if one of us got lost, the God would just go and bring you back into the herd, right? Into the enclosure. In fact, this is what the paradise was called. Paradise is the enclosure. The Garden of Eden is translated from the Sumerian language as the enclosure for wild animals. So this is the Garden of Eden. And if we look at that, what is the herd mentality? Herd mentality is what we see. Yeah, if one of us, like you just mentioned, stand for yourself, be your own person, stand away. But you also have to make sure that you're not swept back in, because it's difficult to stand on your own. It's difficult to maintain your own opinion away from the crowd. It's difficult not to conform, because then you're excluded and from so many groups, right? Your social life can suffer because you don't support their opinions, the opinions of the herd.
Especially younger people. I think as you get older, you learn differently. Not for all. I don't want to generalize again, but younger, you know, as we grow older, we're more capable.
There's a tendency. Yes.
It's less difficult to be your own person when you're older. But when you're saying like paradise is the wild animals, right? We essentially are wild animals who have been tamed. We have been socially constructed to believe certain things. That's why we have the we don't herd mentality anymore to help each other. We don't come together as a village to try to have peace and to do those things. The herd mentality now is like, you have a herd here, you have a herd here, and let's fight each other. It's not like, let's come together and, you know.
Come together right now.
Over that would be nice.
Yeah. You know, but
it seems to be very far from that. But it causes, you know, this misinformation or what they call like fake, all this propaganda, all this stuff makes lots and lots of money. And money is king in a lot of places because money leads to power. And power, I think, is the ultimate control.
And that is the way we need
to
start.
And you can make a lot of money manipulating people and persuading them. Then why change?
It is
about power. Place of power.
Absolutely. I have noticed, and you just so rightfully mentioned, that this is the power of money, and a lot of money, because if we look at the even micro situations, how we're being manipulated, and again, we trust, for example, the medical institution, sometimes blindly, right? Especially when we have a problem, we'll go to the doctor and all of a sudden the doctor prescribes you all this medicine.
Like always preventative. Preventative and not curable. It's pharmaceuticals, or it's dark psychology, I believe, because it's always prevention. It's not cure. Because if
actually,
it was a cure, we could no longer manipulate.
It's treatment. It's treatment and not prevention.
Because
I remember. Yeah. So interestingly, I learned that in the dark psychology class, right? The abnormal psychology class, that our Western medicine is crisis oriented. It is not preventative like it is in other countries.
Well, I think it is. Isn't it preventative? And they try to prevent the symptoms, but it's not. It's
they
not
treat the symptoms.
Just
they
treat
symptoms.
Okay.
Here, we treat the symptoms. We do not prevent it.
Yeah, we don't try to cure it at all.
Yeah.
We want to keep people sick.
We want to keep
people
sick.
For a lack of a better way to put that.
That is absolutely right. And when I learned that, it was from the very beginning. I was also learning about the social structure here in the United States, because I was not born here. And to me, it was such a profound, profound understanding that we do not really care about people getting well. Yeah, lately they started talking about all these preventative measures, how we should eat. And we would send people, for example, to the to dietitians, right? To the weight management, for example. Yeah, that would prevent it. But that was probably just the recent movement, so to say. But even then, you go and they sell you medicine. And why? And I noticed that the medicine that is sold, being in this area for quite some time, I've noticed that the medicine that is being pushed to the public, to the
for
people
weight
that,
loss, you mean?
Not only for weight loss, for anything
that's a big thing
else.
Trending now.
It's
a big trend now, and people are losing significantly amounts of weight without having to alter too much of their lifestyle.
Oh, yeah. And isn't that interesting that why don't you just take the damn responsibility of your own life, right? Go exercise and eat right. Nevertheless, you inject yourself like in the stomach with all those Ozempic injections, right? And that all those pills, they have all side effects, including a huge possibility of cancers and including the thyroid cancer. And we must understand that it's not everything is so rosy and glittery outside, right? There are consequences. And not only that, so other medications that are being pushed to the patients are the ones that come out recently that come out again and again and again. And of course, the pharmaceutical companies, they're paying.
Like what? Psychotropics? What kind of medication? Like
any medication that comes new to the market, they're being pushed through the physicians onto the public by giving physicians great bonuses for prescribing this medication.
Yeah, they'll feed your whole staff. They will come in and they will talk a little bit about the new pharmaceutical drug that they're offering, and they'll feed the entire staff.
Oh yeah, and the
that come in, you can have lunches every week for your entire staff.
That's true. Well,
like you now said, incentives for the doctors.
Absolutely, absolutely. So when you go and ask, and I remember myself that when I needed help, I said I need this medicine. Oh, this is so old. Yes, it is old, and there's barely any side effects. And it was designed in the 80s. And it is so cheap because pharmaceutical companies are not pushing that any longer. They're inventing new medicines all the time, expensive. So that is why the older medications that are actually working pretty good, that are not being promoted by the pharmaceutical companies, they're not prescribed to people. And that is a huge windmill wheel, right, that we're all in. That is, we also have to be really cognizant about that and understand that that is also persuasion. That is also manipulation. But we don't know that. We don't know that. We're happy about it, Dr. Sherry, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Processed foods. I mean, it's a little tick of everything. It's a little pieces of a puzzle that create what we see in our reality days. It creates it. And a lot of people want a paycheck before they do the job. People want to get rewarded before they put in the hard work. People don't want to go to the gym. They don't want to go on a walk. They don't want to work out. You know, they'd rather feed into the persuasion of like, oh, well, if I do this, this, and this, then, but like you said, a lot of things that we agree to in the persuasion and manipulation market oftentimes leave us heavy, can lead to a depression. Like, you could, you know, somebody who, for instance, has a consumption problem, they go out and buy a new car or something, but they really can't afford it. So they end up, you know, trying to make themselves feel better, but at the detriment of their finances, and it might set them back, causing lingering or long lasting traumatic experiences.
Oh, yes.
Or maybe not even traumatic, you know.
Traumatic. You're right, because they will have the feelings of remorse for buying that they cannot return those expensive purchases. A friend of mine once said that he left the sales because in order to make the sales, of course, that they had a quota every single day, he had to go and sell so many different computers. And the computers, they ranged from the cheap to the most expensive ones. And he said that I could no longer trick people into that they would come, for example, for something not computer related, and we would sell them computers and expensive ones. We would persuade them that they need them. And he said, I had to leave because I feel so dirty. I feel so bad by tricking people into that. And, you know, people don't buy anything because they feel that, oh, I'm being manipulated here. You're just imposing that computer on me. Now they make an emotional purchase. They believe that they need it, that they're going to be so much better off with this expensive computer, right? So we must understand that, while there are sales, in the sales world, this is my understanding, we have to be so vigilant and understand the techniques that are being used. And especially when someone is trying to sell you something urgently, that tomorrow is going to be gone. Even if when you hang up right now, you're going to lose your space in line, right? And the promotion is going to be gone. It's only now or never.
And yes, so you have to have awareness in life. You have to realize to yourself, is this a necessity or is this a want? Is it a need or a want? Some people feel like they need it. And if you're in the mindset that you need something to make you feel whole, if you think something outside of yourself is going to make you feel whole, then chances are you're going to reap what you sow. Right? Is that say that right?
You know what? It's Mercury retrograde. It just went to retrograde a couple of days ago. And I never believed that it was even anything worthwhile of even looking into that. But that Mercury retrograde affects everything, affects thinking, affects technology, travel, everything.
Communication, I believe, huh?
What's that?
That's a big one. Specifically communication.
Communications,
whether it be like computer, people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we have to be cognizant about that. It's just a warning to your people. It is not some empty worded statements been tested and tested. And that is so strange how planets can affect us.
I think we're driven in this society, and I think for a long time, to look for the magic pill, whatever it might be. Look for the magic.
Looking for a magic pill that will solve all of her problems.
Yeah. And it's just not existent. You know, these, like you said, like these, I think it's great for people, you know, people have suffered from obesity for a really long time and they're able to control their weight. But I've witnessed people like a dear person in my life. She had diabetes and she's had some issues and she started taking medication that was prescribed for her. I think it's called Mounjaro, just prescribed for diabetes. She lost a lot of weight, but she also made lifestyle changes. Mm-hmm. She's doing lifestyle changes. She's eating better. She does her own exercises. So in those cases, it has changed her life and it's changed it for the better. So, there are rare cases mm-hmm. that people do actually, but a lot of people just rely on the pill and then they wonder why it's not working anymore.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're absolutely right. And you mentioned that we need an immediate fix, right? This is an immediate fix because our lives are so busy. We don't even want to stop. We don't want to allocate this time to exercising. We don't want to be thinking, even myself, like I get so busy, I open the fridge and I eat whatever that I can find, right? In order to run. And then I stop myself. I was like, what am I doing? I am what I eat. I am what I eat.
Or think about when something's loading on a computer. It's not cooperating. And we're like, speaking for myself or my children, get so frustrated. And it's like that was once a time that didn't even exist. And now we such want that instant gratification because that's how life is presented in front of us on our phones and media. It's instant. You can look up something on ChatGPT. You know, it'll write a book for you if you wanted it to. You know, I wouldn't recommend anybody use it word for word to do that. But it's just everything is becoming immediate. And when things don't happen immediately, we kind of react like, oh, you know, like we're not getting our way. I wonder how that's going to affect the children of the future, how this is going to
Well, there is already psychological research that is done on the immediate gratification, right? We must understand that the immediate gratification, for example, that the study that was done was children, and that they were placed a couple of candies in front of them, and they were told that you're going to get another candy if you don't eat it right now. I'm going to step out of the room, and then I'm going to come back, and I'll give you another candy. So you'll have three candies, if I remember that correctly, to eat. Mm-hmm. Marshmallow. That candy is marshmallows. That's right. That was the incentive. Those children that ate it without even waiting for the third candy, right? The incentive, proved to do much worse in life as an adult, not achieving their goals, versus those that waited for the person to come back to give them another candy. Those that waited, impulsivity also, and those that waited, those children, they proved to do much better in life. They were much more responsible. They were much more goal-oriented, and they achieved
better critical
their
thinkers.
Goals. Critical thinkers. So this is so interesting. So while we have our children that immediately want this candy or this toy or that, we must understand, hey, there is a psychological research. I better not succumb to my children's tantrum that is laying on the floor and screaming, I want this, I want this. Like, get up, quit it, and I'm not going to buy it for you now. right? I'm not going to buy it for you. Mm-hmm. So those that are able to wait, those that understand do much better in life. So if you want your children to do well because you are concerned about their well-being, after you are well way gone, we're going to die and our children are going to be there, right? So do not give children everything that they ask. Even if you were deprived as a child, it does not mean that to your children, you have to just give everything that they ask. And I have a friend like that. He came from the poor country in South America, was poor. His family was poor and he was poor up until the early 20s when he was able to come to the United States and secure some working place for himself. He was when he got married and had children, he would give anything that the children asked, indulge them in anything that they wanted. And then they became teenagers. He bought any car that they wanted because he was deprived as a child, as a teenager, and he did not want that for his children. And long story short, his children grew up. And his children are no better than him because he was essentially an immigrant and his children are the first generation here. And the interesting thing is just because they did not have any necessity, they did not become so success-oriented, goal-oriented.
Well, they didn't learn how to work it on. They didn't learn how to work it. And that's not having anything of monetary statue like that is not a deprivation. So when somebody if a child wants a marshmallow and they're about to eat, you say you can't have that marshmallow, which speaking, I kind of want a marshmallow now. But if they can't have what you don't want them to have in that moment, that's not a deprivation. That's teaching them to have a tough skin. You can't have it now because of A, B, and C. You know, you're not deprived. If you are not allowing them to eat and you didn't want them to have food, that's a deprivation. So that's, and unfortunately, your friend, there's an illusion of the mind there. Well, I didn't have anything, so I'm going to give my kids everything. There's a difference because, just because you didn't have a car out of high school does not mean you were deprived of a car. That's not a deprivation. That's something you could work for on your own. Being poor can be a deprivation in certain circumstances. But I have heard of things like that, and I have seen it as well in my own life, that people will give their children everything because they use the excuse that they didn't have anything. But I think it's easier. It's easier to give them everything and to give them their way. But as they grow up, as a parent, you are going to learn that they're going to have less respect for you. And there's going to come a point that when you're going to want to stop giving, it's going to become not impossible, but it's going to become a battle. So you're really, not only are you setting up your children for failure, you're also setting yourself up for failure. Anybody who takes a shortcut in life or takes the easy way out, as they get older and when you may believe you're off the market per se, when you get to older, those things I think start to accumulate. All those things, you wake up and you're like, whoa, what was I thinking? I took all these shortcuts and I have nothing to show for it.
This is such a great point, Dr. Sherry. This is such a great point. And if we think about it seriously, we don't even have to go far when you're off the market, right? When your children are adults, we don't have to go far because I have friends, not friends, the acquaintances here that I observe with my teenage daughter, their parents. They give everything their children want. Anything they want to go to the party, they allow them to go. You want this expensive dress? Oh, please. You want this crazily priced shoes? What was that? An acquaintance of mine bought her daughter $450 shoes, a teenager, 15-year-old teenager.
Oh, she was 14 at the time. So be it.
She does not have the money. She does not have the money. And the thing is that she would buy that for her daughter and give her anything that she ever wanted because she would make a scene. She would know how to manipulate her mother, and her mother would just take the money out of her budget for those dark days, right? And she would just buy that to her, not having the budget to do so. And myself trying to make the point and help her understand that this is not the way And when she started complaining to me that her daughter is mistreating her badly, and I heard the words that she was telling her mother, how she was treating her like a non-existent, not even a human being. It was not a mother. There was such a disrespect for her. And I said, before it is too late, your daughter is 14, 15, before it is too late, you must stop.
It's probably indulging. A bit late at this time, but yes. She can still stop indulging if it's not make. I think at the end of the day, wherever you are in your life, can you look at yourself, not even in a mirror? Can you sit down in your person right now and say, am I being honest with myself? Am I happy? Isn't the ultimate place in life is to find meaning and to be happy and to be have a meaningful life? You know, I think it doesn't matter your education, what you have, how much money, what you have outside of yourself. Are you happy? You know, that's the bottom line. I think that's the bottom of everything. Because you don't have to have all of that stuff to ever be happy. Am I happy? But always have goals. You know, people like you, I would say for you, you're a very determined individual. You always have goals. And I think that for the most part, you seem to be happy. Still trying to accomplish things in your life.
Yeah, but the interesting thing about happiness, it is so overrated in our society. What is happiness? And again, the happiness is sold to us.
Being happy in your own
the media.
Skin. Being happy in your own skin. Being able to smile. Being happy in your own skin. Not trying to modify. Not trying to look out. I mean, we're all going to struggle with it. But I think, you know, I'm not saying that you have to be happy every day. But isn't the ultimate goal to say the choices I'm making in my life today, the choices I've can't change the past. But are the choices I'm making today making me happy? Sometimes I'm not happy and I have to speak about it with somebody or I have to talk about it. I'm not happy. Can we change something? Can we make a change if it's with a person? Or what can I do to alter it if I'm not happy? But I think the final goal is to feel at peace, maybe should I say, at peace?
That is the greatest statement. You have to feel at peace because the concept of happiness is so overrated in our Western society. We have to always chase after something in order to feel happy. Mm-hmm. Here, for example, is Southern California. Everybody is like so high on damn happiness. When I moved to California, I thought, why people are just so happy? You know that.
But are they?
Well, I thought that they were, and they were always so positive and smiling. And later I learned to understand that they were all either high or they were taking medicine to make themselves high. They were always, or the, you know, those the amphetamines that people can be taking.
Yes, pharmaceutical.
As a medication, of course. Mm-hmm. Is that that gives you energy, that gives you increase in dopamine and serotonin. And then you think that this is what happiness is, right? But in fact, it is not.
No.
This is not
when you go
up,
you got to come down.
You will always come down. And when we in our culture hear that, oh, we have to be happy. We have to chase happiness. We have to do what makes us happy. What is happiness? Well, you said it's to be content, it to be at peace. And I would just like strongly urge people to reconsider that the notion of happiness that they have. Perhaps a lot of people are unhappy because they think that they have not achieved happiness in their lives because this is what the society dictates. This is what I need to have and be in order to be happy.
But you can always alter your current state in your mind. Now, and if you've just experienced grief or something like that, that's a whole nother entity, right? I'm not talking about you just lost a person that you love and you have to be on top of the moon. In cases like that, no. Just generally speaking, like Dr. Peterson says, he's like, people, you see somebody driving a sports car, like a Porsche, and you're like, I want that life. But behind the wheel of that car, this person's depressed. They don't love their life, and they're ready to go hit an embankment with their car.
Divorced 5 times, exactly. Abuses everybody else around them. Yeah.
I think, you know, stop trying to get what everybody has. And I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, how do you become your own individual? How do you stop following the herd mentality? How do you stop, you know, believing in the dark psychology, giving into this darkness where you have so much potential to be light and to experience that lightness of being?
lightness of being. You know, when people talk to me that, Yana, you're not happy. Oh, let's go to the party here and there. You're sad. I'm not sad. I'm content in the first place. And being happy all the time when it comes at certain times in your life, when you get married, when you have children, when you publish your book, for example, when you get that job, there's time to be happy. You cannot be excessively happy all the time. And that is a huge, big lie, people. Because if you want to be happy, contentment and peace, like you said, Dr. Sherry, contentment and peace, this is what you should be striving for. You know, I can share with you what my understanding, and of course that the understanding of happiness changes from time to time in different waves of your life.
Yeah, you're not supposed to be happy steadily, but you know, it allows, by not being happy steadily, it allows you to be in contact with what changes can I make to feel that way.
Yeah. Otherwise, you will not even know that you're happy. You have to have ups and downs, and that is absolutely normal. Don't follow that hype of the happiness that I have to be absolutely and always totally happy. This is not the case. For example, I was remember that years back, I was calling a friend of mine, and she asked me how I was. I said, you know what? I am so happy. And let me tell you what happiness is. But first I asked her, I said, do you know what happiness is? And she's like, oh, that is such an interesting question. Okay, like happiness in the family, your children are doing very well. And then you have the house. Those are the goals, right? Or you have enough money for this and that. I said, those are all the goals. I said, do you know what the happiness truly is? I said, the happiness is when you are at peace. When you're head, for example, works, you are able to think. When you are in an upright position, and why not horizontal? Because with a sleep disorder that I have, it's sometimes there are cognitive disturbances. You want to sleep all the time. That it is so profoundly difficult even to be at peace. So I told her that day when I felt, I would say, normal for myself, that I did not have an episode, the sleeping episode. I said, this is what happiness is. To be free of that, to be able to think, to be able to smile, to be able to play with dogs, to be able to smile at another human being, not because you're depressed, for example, right in my case, but because you have that lightness of your being, that you are able to communicate with another person. And for us, for example, if we get a break someplace else, if we have some physical infirmity, right? And all of a sudden we have a good day. This is happiness. This is happiness, right? Or if our life is so difficult and then all of a sudden the wind breaks, brings you a break, right? You get a break. That is happiness. You know, it is not something that you have to feel high all the time, hyped up, not the high, right? Hyped up and happy all the time. This is not the case. So don't believe that. Define your own understanding of happiness. For example, for me, it is just to sit, to have the time, to sit and read the book, to think, to write. This is happiness for me. To connect on an authentic level with another human being, like with you, Dr. Sherry, that I love dearly. And I love talking to you because I know that there's going to be every single time an authentic connection and an understanding between us. So that is happiness.
It is.
A lot said. Yeah, we are talking about the manipulation today.
Tomorrow we're going to take over the mind. I mean, next week we're going to take over the mind.
We are going to take over the mind. And of course, that we're going to actually go back to, would say, the psychology of our minds. And actually the psyche as well, because we are going back to the science of hypnosis, because Dr. Sherry and I, we are hypnotherapists, and we will be going back after exploring so many different topics. We will be going and undertaking this incredible journey in hypnosis to deconstruct for you the notions of hypnosis, the applications of hypnosis, issues that can arise with it, and also how hypnosis can help you. What do we eat hypnosis with? Dr. Sherry is a professional chef, and she cooks so marvelously. So we're gonna, what are we gonna eat, Dr. Sherry, the hypnosis with? We, every single time that you hear us, we will talk about different topics in hypnosis, helping you understand what can be, well, how can you use it? And again, of course, we will be talking about all of the issues that arise. Ask us questions, write us email. We will be happy to discuss it openly on the radio. You have been with us on United Public Radio Network, 107.7 FM, beautiful New Orleans. And this is a beautiful Dr. Sherry, and not less fantastic, the beautiful Dr. Yana. So we thank you for joining us today, and we expect to see you next week. Have a great day, everyone. Thank you, Dr. Sherry, for your incredible insights.
Right back at you.
Goodbye.